Welcome, listeners, to Sounding Out's podcast series, an oral chronicle of sound and culture. Sounding Out remixes the everyday with theory, insight, and practice. To learn more, please visit us on the web at www.soundstudiesblog.com. Until then, stay tuned for today's episode.
Record stores used to be these sacred places manned by priests tasked with upholding the holy trinity of good taste, esoteric knowledge, and alienating snobbery.
I still like going to record stores, and it's sad that so many of them are going out of business, even the former, you know, the big corporate one.
You know, that look, the gimlet eye, I'm still embarrassed. To this day, I'll come up with some vinyl, right, that I've proudly culled from the... And if I've got a couple of bullshit selections, maybe I'm not allowed to say that given where this is going to be broadcast, I'll be sure to have some kind of, you know, curveball selection that I pick, sometimes just so that I won't be looked down upon by the person that I have to give my money to.
For people that love music, we're the candy bar at the corner store. You know, we're the, I'm going to pop in there, I'm going to have an experience, I'm going to hang out for 30 minutes, say hello to the people that I know that work there, and pick up something new to listen to while I'm driving around or whatever.
It used to be that I was just drawn to record stores. It wasn't even necessarily about buying anything.
And I love, like, some people, you know, there's kind of the joke about the music store employee, but personally I loved kind of testing myself against the music store employee. Like, I remember going once, I was at the Mad Platter, the record store that I grew up with. In Riverside, California, sadly, it's not there anymore. Is it this like place that it's called Off the Mall? Like, it was next to the mall, but it was like the anti-mall, and there's like a denim bank next to it. And there's this guy that I had a crush on in high school that worked there. And I remember going to buy, it was like 1991, and I was going to buy Rage Against the Machine's first record. And he looks at me and he goes, you know, I plunk it down. He goes, oh, you know that all those songs sound the same. And I was like, yeah, but it's a song I want to listen to right now. You know, like I never was like, I didn't back down. They looked askance at me like it was me also.
I was in Red Bank a lot. And like, I used to spend a lot of time in the 90s. Back in the 90s, I used to go to Jack's Music a lot. And admittedly, I was kind of scoping out dudes a lot of the time. But I was also interested in the CDs that they had. They had a lot of CDs. It seemed like, it was like an endless number.
I still have this very strong memory of being about 9 years old, and at the very top of the wall, way the hell up on the wall, was a bumper sticker. It was a Union Jack, and it said The Who, who were my favorite band at that age. And, you know, I plunked down the money, and, you know, with the woman who was working behind the counter, who, you know, I probably had some kind of crush on, and she, you know, kind of smiled at me indulgently and got it down, because I was probably announcing myself as some jerk buying this thing.
That's great, because she kind of crushed you, but she kind of just,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, no, you know, it was
very gently.
Sure, I felt vaguely humiliated, even though I was excited to have this thing. And only, you know, years later when, you know, that I realized, oh, she was very nice because she didn't tell me to beat it or something. You know, we don't accept your money for that here, you know. You know, and for a long time, you know, it's not like I could go home and say, hey, Mom, I bought a bumper sticker for your car. So I didn't do anything with it. I think I had it, like, in a book or something. And then stuck it on my a case that I kept my bass in until it, you know, peeled off and disappeared. But
I guess there's always the stereotype of the snotty dude behind the counter who, you know, super judgy about the things that you're buying. So on the one hand, you know, maybe if I'm buying something cheesy, I don't mind ordering it off the internet, that I don't have to deal with the attitude from someone who's working retail, which is always a good thing, I think.
There's also something about the moment of exchange value, the cash nexus of buying, you know, plunking down your money, credit card, cash, whatever, and receiving the object, which is different from just buying it online, getting it in the mail, or just accessing it online. There's something about that moment of exchange Mm-hmm. Which, you know, has given rise to no end of cultural studies, meditations on the relationship between pop music, commercial music, and capitalism. But I've always acknowledged and thought it was interesting that desire for a particular sound takes the form of the commercially mediated moment.
But it is, you know, it's tough selling physical goods of anything, you know, right now. And there's a lot of, as much as I talked about those positives, you know, you still have people that are like, well, you know, they can check on their smartphone and see how much it's going for on Amazon, which, you know, if I was an independent business in the electronics realm or something, man, you know, or selling designer clothing or whatever, I mean, that would be, I can't imagine how devastating that is.
Well, yeah, because in some ways it's back to that they want to sell it to you. So it's all like in some ways they're invested in those connections too, because you know there's a way that you know those connections are enabled in that particular place in some ways because of capitalism in that sense. You know, that's why it's all coming at you and wanting you to connect the dots.
I remember being a teenager and spending hours after school hanging out at my local Coconut Records, fantasizing about the CDs I'd buy after saving enough of my pocketed lunch money. Where do young musical lovers of today hang out? Chat rooms? Like billiard halls with good jukeboxes? Are kids even afraid of record store clerks anymore? If not, they're missing out on an essential milestone of their adolescent musical development.
Let's see, I came back to Columbia in 1970, and I worked in a record store called Discount Records that was actually a part of a chain that was owned by Columbia Records, CBS.
And I guess I like, you know, obviously I like used things because they're cheap. And I guess, I don't know, the last CDs I bought were at a thrift store, and they're all like, you know, like Riot Girl fans. And I was like, oh, I want all this stuff. You know, it's, here are things that I've lost and I can just buy them again for $1. And that's awesome. And I like it. And so, you know, buying a whole CD for $1 probably works out to be cheaper than, you know, purchasing it, you know, track by track online or whatever. But
we're now in the first time ever, we're in the circumstance where people screen a lot of music via downloads or purchase a lot of music via downloads. And obviously there's a lot of rogue sites out there where people get music without paying for it. But I think people base their physical good purchases on a lot of that they preview music, whether it's streaming the new album on NPR or Pace Magazine or someplace like that. They go, "Ooh, man, I heard the Buxom record on Pace. I never even heard that. I'm going to buy it," you know?
In fact, I remember being young, being in this record store in the East Village. I'm not sure it's even there anymore. And I remember some album was playing over their PA, you know, some kind of like 70s stoner rock, kind of like Black Sabbath-y kind of thing, but something I'd never heard before. It was totally amazing.
I just remember really being intrigued by, like, I don't know, how many different genres there were, and I don't know, they had like everything under the sun, and it was just exciting. It was just really exciting to look through all that stuff.
A couple of minutes later, I, you know, stopped whatever bin I was flipping through and looked up because they were playing the soundtrack, the theme song from the show Taxi, which I didn't know it was on vinyl. I mean, maybe it's some other, you know, some guy's, you know, great masterwork, and I'm just revealing my ignorance. But it was just one of these moments where I was like, this is why I want to be here, because, you know, Danny DeVito and Jim Ignatowski and whatever is going on is, you know, but, you know, you're brought to a different place.
Regular customers that I recall that still, people who still exist, were, there's a local child shrink named Joel Ray, was a regular customer for several years. Joe Bean, who is still a philosophy professor, was a regular customer. classical music customer. Scott Salt, who is in the psychology department, was a regular customer. Nancy Ginn Almond was a lady, a female customer, who was a quite regular.
And the packaged goods have kind of caught up on the CD side, have really caught up with the appeal. You're seeing less and less jewel boxes that break the minute you do. You know, for years, we were the only industry that packaged our art in something that broke as soon as you dropped it on the floor. That's terrible. I mean, who thought of it? That was the stupidest thing ever.
I just remember my brother was super excited about just like looking through the like billions of bins that they had of like dollar records and just random nonsense that you know, would be piled up. And as far as the space is concerned, it's pretty cramped. But I mean, I think that added to the interesting aspects of it, because it was, you kind of like were forced to interact with people, and there were, you could tell how much stuff that they had just based on the fact that they crammed it all into like one tiny space.
And I had to like work up the courage to find one of the clerks there. And I was like, hey man, like, what is this? This is totally awesome. And he just like unhappily looked at the counter, pointed at the CD that was like standing up there underneath like a sign that said, this is what's currently playing. Just like walked away. Didn't even bother to find the CD for me.
You know, none of us, the man, I mean, we do have, you know, a place where you have to count your money and stuff, but generally, you know, the guy that checks everything in, myself, the operating partner of the business, most of the managers, you know, we're on the floor talking to people every day. You know, we're not like, oh, go get him out of his office. I mean, that's what we love about what we do. And I think that fosters this kind of sense where people feel good about spending their money here. And I think a lot of record stores around the country are seeing that. But
I mean, you know, these are places where aesthetic distinctions being made and produced, like, as you stand. And therefore all kinds of desires are activated.
But it's kind of the pursuit. It's the desire, the erotics of the pursuit there or something.
There was a gentleman named Dr. Andrew C. Minor, who was a music professor who was here a long time. I don't know if he was proud of the fact, but I was always proud of the fact that he never came, as far as I know, he never came in the place. And Dr. Minor supposedly had one of the biggest comprehensive classical music record collections, I'm sure, in Columbia, not, you know, anywhere. But he never, I don't think I ever saw him once in Streetside Records, and I can imagine why, because he probably just hated the sound of the music playing, and he would rather deal with going through the postal service rather than to have his ears assaulted by popular music.
It's exciting to try something new. It's exciting to be like, I've never heard of this, I've never seen this before, and now I'm going to buy it on a whim, and it might be the greatest thing I've ever heard, literally, like the best thing I've ever heard, and I'll never be the same because of this one chance that I took.
I don't know, I still try to go out to a physical, you know, to an actual store to buy things, because I do enjoy the experience of walking around and flipping through, you know, CD racks to see, you know, if something's interesting, if I would have missed it otherwise.
And all of a sudden, over the you know, the PA in the record store, the Smiths came on, and it was like this moment of like sheer, moment, you know, take me out tonight, and you know, all of a sudden, this moment where I'm like, oh God, like my 13-year-old self is just so completely fulfilled right now. Like I'm in England, it's great. I'm from Southern California, so you know, we always had to fake our grayness. So I was like, you know, it was just this moment of stride, and it made me in this weird way, like home, like it is like home, think of home and like being this, all of a sudden like everything just kind of felt like right. It was like a similar moment to that. And that was one of my best record shopping days ever. it was great to be so far away, but yet feel home, and you know, and the record store, I think, is a big part of that feeling.
The other thing is, if you're an independent business and not a chain, have a store dog, because you're the only business that can people, you know, that's kind of funny, but it is true. People really respond to that. And right. It's a kooky, fun thing. Whatever you can do to be
continues to
different
build community and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, people, dude, people come in here, and we sometimes have three or four of them, you know, walking around, and generally they're like, man, I can't live with dogs.